Welcome to the Running in the Center of the Universe podcast. I'm Ashland Dave, and I'm recording live from my podcast studio in Ashland, Virginia. Thanks for coming along. And this is Ashland Dave, and this is the Running in the Center of the Universe podcast, episode 196. This is going to be 5 marathons in 5 days with Sandy Steiner. Thanks for coming along. It's the week of April 24th, 2014. Thanks for downloading the podcast. This is Ashland Dave. I'm coming at you from Ashland, Virginia, Central Virginia, center of the universe. And tonight I've got Sandy via Skype, and we're going to talk about a topic that's long overdue. Back in September of 2013, she did 5 marathons in 5 days called the Center of the Nation Series, and a pretty remarkable thing. And we're going to talk about that tonight. We're going to talk about some of Sandy's motivation, logistics on how on earth do you manage to run 5 marathons in 5 days, what kind of support that you need, and how you get your gear around, how you decide which clothes to wear, and the people that you meet along the way. So, Sandy, thank you so much for coming along. How you doing tonight?
I'm good.
All right. Appreciate you having the time. We're going to talk about something you did, gosh, 6 months ago, 7 months ago now. That's kind of old news now, but tell us about the Center of the Nation series. I guess to begin with, how did you find out about it, and what kind of plans did you make at the beginning to do that series?
Well, it was probably about midnight, and I was surfing the Marathon Maniacs page looking for races to do, and I had a beer or two and brought the idea up with my husband of doing these 5 marathons in 5 states in 5 days out west, and he said, go for it.
So this is the Center of the Nation series, and anybody who's listening to the show can Google that or Yahoo that or whatever you do these days and find that. And it's in 5 different states, which I didn't mention right at the beginning, which means obviously the marathons are not all on the weekend. It's 5 consecutive days in 5 different states, all that are, I guess, contiguous or connected to each other. And where was the first one? When did that? It was all in September. I guess the first one was September 16th, right?
Yeah, we drove out from Michigan, and the first one was in Bowman, North Dakota.
And what is that near for anyone who doesn't even know where North Dakota is?
Well, I'll be honest with you, it's not really near anything. None of these races are near anything. They're pretty isolated small towns, but it's maybe an hour north of the South Dakota border.
Okay. So you decide to do this. You get approval and support from your husband. And the what did you do to train? I guess you had signed on to do all 5. I presume there were people that probably did not do all 5. But that was your plan. So what was your training leading up to that? I guess physically, what kind of mileage were you doing, similar to your 100-mile training?
Yeah, it was very similar. Pretty much followed Brian Powell's Relentless Forward Progress plan. I think that this was coming off of a I'm sorry, I lost my train of thought.
It's all right.
Okay. Yeah, this was shortly after my last 100-miler in New York in August. So I was pretty much trained up for a 100-miler, and I just continued the training on to do these races. Sorry, it's so long ago, I kind of lost my memory of it.
Well, I know we've been trying to do this. We've talked about doing this for a while, and I know it's kind of overdue, and it's partly my fault, but so when you go, like, you wore the same bib for each race, so I guess you signed on for the series. How much did it cost to sign up?
I think it was about maybe $65 or $70 a race. I'm not 100% sure, but you got a $10 discount for being a Marathon Maniac per day, so I saved $50 on it. They had a nice deal, too, where if you had a friend or family member volunteer for a day, then you could run your race for free.
Oh, wow. Did you get Eric to do that?
No. He said he was on vacation, although he pretty much worked at the aid station anyway. He just did it on his own because he's a nice guy.
Oh, okay. Yeah, not looking for any credit other than in this podcast, I guess.
Right. Yeah.
All right, so the first one was in Bowman, so that was I guess the was there a race briefing? Was it kind of like an ultra type of I don't know, environment, or was it more marathon environment? I mean, what was the feeling? Do you remember?
It was so relaxed. We had a little pre-race dinner at a golf course in Bowman, North Dakota, before the race. That would have been on Sunday night because the races went Monday through Friday.
Oh, okay.
So we had a pasta dinner and just got to meet the race director, who's an awesome guy. His name's Clint Burleson. And he's the organizer for mainlymarathons.com. That's M-A-I-N-L-Y, marathons.com. And we got to learn a little bit about the way the setup was going to be. And all you had to do is show up, you know, a minute before the race and go. You could leave a little drop bag on the side of the road and access it as often as you needed to, because most of the races were out and backs on a road.
Now, we had talked about, before I started producing here this evening, we had talked about a video on YouTube that's called the 555 Center of the Nation series. It's a 7-minute video on YouTube that I thought was pretty good. I think you were featured in the start of the third marathon. Yeah, it looked like a pretty flat prairie type of environment. What was I'm not going to ask you about each individual race, but what was some of the terrain like? Was it all looked like the out and back? You could see people ahead of you, see people behind you. Was it similar type of terrain? I guess it's pretty flat out there.
It was pretty flat. There was a couple little hills on some of the courses, but mostly it was flat. The courses ranged from like a concrete sidewalk through a city to a gravel roads on a cattle ranch. And then we had one course that was in a state park. That one was the Nebraska one, and that was my favorite.
Okay, so the one in Nebraska was, let me pull up your spreadsheet again here.
Chadron, that was the last day.
Okay, that Chadron, Nebraska, that's Chadron. Again, just kind of a place out in a rural type of community area.
Yes, yes. The hardest part about all of it was the travel in between. On some of the days, we'd have to drive 4 or 5 hours to get to the next state to do the race in the next morning.
Okay, so each, because in the video, it kind of gave me an idea of, daylight and stuff like that. It looked like in one of them, it was maybe a sun was setting, but it looked like more of sunrise, I presume. They were all in the morning.
Yeah, it was sunrise. They all were early morning races.
So you had, $65 a race isn't too bad. I didn't know that it started on a Monday, so I guess you traveled on, how long did it take you to get to the first one? You're from Michigan, so you drive Michigan to South Dakota. How far is that?
Well, I think it's a good 2 days drive, but we took our RV and just camped. We were gone for 4 weeks, including the week of the race.
Oh, okay. So you made it. That's right. Eric said he was on vacation. So you got to the first one, you finished that one. Now were the, how many people ran the first one, like 50 to 100, or was it a couple hundred?
I think there was about maybe 50 people at least each day. There was a lot of people that did every race. And then there was also people doing half marathons, too. And the way they did this was to count, because it was out and backs on roads and there was no chip timing or anything. So what they did was they'd put up a sign at the start of the race, and it told you that to finish the race, you had to collect so many rubber bands. Maybe 6 for the half and say 12 for the full. So you'd start at the start line, then you go out to the turnaround and come back to the start. And every time you'd pass the start, you'd put your wrist out and a volunteer would slip a rubber band over your wrist. And when you collected the appropriate amount of rubber bands, you were done for the day.
Oh, so they were just literally repeated out and backs.
Yes.
That's kind of a mental, that kind of screws with you mentally a little bit, doesn't it?
Well, I thought it would, but the cool thing was there were so many people and you made so many friends and you got to see a ton of people the whole way, where if it was, say, a point-to-point with a small group like this, you might not see anyone or talk to anyone the whole day.
Yeah, that's true. That's kind of an advantage of that out and back when that's a good point. That's a good point there. So were these, I guess it was, were they special rubber bands or There's always
just average rubber bands, and sometimes you'd see one on the side of the road that someone had dropped, and if they did an extra one because they lost their band. And by the end of the week, there was someone with a sign on the side of the road with some rubber bands taped to it saying that they'd sell you rubber bands for cheap, and they'd take credit cards, and the week it was funny.
So you're talking about the travel in between races. I thought I saw on the website that it was roughly 200 miles between starting lines. It sounds like, and some of them were a little bit more. What were some of the travel situations like?
Well, on the way out to North Dakota, we got a flat tire on the RV, so that didn't help anything. When we did get to North Dakota, finally, we camped right at the where the race was. It was in a park, so we just camped there in the RV, and we were right there at the start line. But then after that race, we had to drive about 3 to 4 hours down to Belle Fourche, South Dakota, and we stayed there for 3 nights. That was kind of nice to be able to stay there in one spot. So that second morning, we had the Belle Fourche, South Dakota race, and I literally walked from the RV to the start. Didn't take more than 3 minutes.
Yeah, you can't beat that.
No, that was perfect. I got to sleep in that day. Then the next day we went to Colony, Wyoming, and that was maybe a 20-minute drive each way, so that was no big deal. And then the following day we went to Albion, Montana. That was the one that was out on the cattle ranch, and that was about an hour drive each way. But the thing was that when you went to Albion, Montana, it took you about an hour north of Belle Fourche, and then we had to turn around after that race and drive down to Chadron, Nebraska. So you're already an hour further north of where you need to be. So, I mean, it was a long day driving after running a marathon all the way down to Nebraska.
Oh, no doubt. Now, yeah. were these rural areas? Were there places? I mean, what did you do for fueling to recover after the races?
Well, luckily I had my husband there who took care of everything for me. Not everyone had that luxury. He did all the cooking and everything, and all I had to do was sit and stick my feet in a bucket of ice and relax and hydrate.
Oh, so y'all cooked in the RV?
Yeah, a lot of barbecuing.
How about the weather? What was the weather like? Any surprises?
We had everything you could imagine. The first day was cold and really windy, like 20, 30 mile an hour winds. And there was really no cover at any of these races. You're kind of exposed because you can see forever at these places. So I don't think it was more than 40 degrees with that wind. And then on the second day, it had to have been in the 80s and wow. No shade. Same thing with the third day. And then we got to Montana, and that day was so cold. I don't think it was more than 35 the whole day. Ooh. And we had winds that were up to 40 miles an hour. And there were people that, you know, they start the race in tights and a long sleeve shirt. They would stop at their car, and one guy actually went and put jeans on over his tights because he didn't have anything warmer than tights because he didn't expect it to be that cold in September. But then on the last day in Chadron, it was just perfect weather, and that course was really cool where it was a loop instead of doing out and backs, and they let you choose which direction you wanted to go. So you could alternate directions each loop or do all the loops in one direction, whatever you wanted to do. The craziest thing about the weather, though, was a week after the race, they got 3 to 4 feet of snow out there in South Dakota.
Wow.
I know. I couldn't even imagine what we would have done if we were out there for the race and they got that snow then.
And this was late. This would have been late September when they got the snow, is what you're saying.
Right. It was like the 25th of September.
Oh, my goodness.
It was crazy. I guess a lot of cattle died.
Oh, wow. Now, of course, I've got tons of questions, and I'm sure we'll fill up all the time and probably run out of time. But all right, well, you have, what do you do with the, are these closed courses? Were there cars? Were there police? I mean, what were some of the logistics with that? You know, which things that race directors have to encounter? What, if you don't have a really big race, you know, you can just act as a pedestrian. But when you have bibs on, sometimes authorities get, you know how it is. I mean, they wonder what's going on. So what kind of support did you have to protect the course and protect your safety?
There really wasn't. I don't remember seeing any police out on any of the courses at all. They were all on just backcountry roads, and they had permission to just use it for the race. And I don't remember any cars coming up and down any of the roads. So it was perfectly safe.
How about any wildlife or anything out there?
Just, you know, cattle. I don't remember. Oh, there was some. I don't remember if it was some kind of deer or an elk or something, but one of the runners hit one with their car and wrecked their car, rental car, pretty good.
Oh, that sucks. That definitely. What about your flat tire? Did y'all get that fixed okay?
Yeah, it took about 2 days to get it fixed because we're out in the middle of nowhere. I mean, we know how to change a tire, but the problem was that the lug nuts were on so tight we couldn't get it loosened up. So, you know, we had roadside service, but they told us, you know, we'll get someone out there as soon as we can. But it took almost 2 days to get someone out there. They finally called this guy who they'd called twice, and the guy took pity on us because he felt bad that we were traveling and our roadside service was being so crappy about it. But the guy drove out like an hour each way with an impact wrench just so we could loosen up the tires. That's all he did was bring us the impact wrench, which was just a godsend. But since then, we bought our own impact wrench.
Oh, yeah. Now, is it a dual axle or a like a two tires on the back of the RV on each side?
Yeah, and it was the inside. Oh. You learn as you go with an RV. That's the first time we dealt with that.
Oh, I would have so much anxiety. I went camping once with a pop-up tent, and I had so much anxiety just trailering the thing. But y'all drive yours. You don't. It's not a tow, right? Or do you tow
no,
it?
No, you drive it. It's a Class C.
Drive it, okay. All right, so, of course, a lot of people would wonder, they can maybe understand the ultra running thing, but what's up with five marathons in 5 days? What was the, I think you said how you had found out about it, but what was the draw? Was it the challenge? Was it the fact that it's, 130 some, what's the distance all told?
I think it's 131.
That's pretty incredible. What?
I don't know. I just wanted to see if I could do it. You know how it is when you sign up for a race, everyone says, can you do that? And you say, I don't know. I've never done it before, so I don't know if I can do it, but I'm going to try.
Yeah, that's the attraction and the challenge is, you don't know if you're going to be able to do it, but, you certainly did it. So how many people did all five of them? Did you have a little group at the picture at the end or a little gathering?
You know, we really did, and everyone just kind of had to beat feet and get home because everyone had been gone from their jobs for a whole week or whatnot. But, you know, we might get together in evenings after a race and, you know, hang out with people. Everything was real small town, though, so there wasn't a lot of restaurants, and the hotels were real small. A lot of them were family-owned type operations.
Uh-huh.
Nothing, you know, expensive. They were pretty much just local mom-and-pop type places. This was the first year for the event, so they were kind of learning as they went when they organized it, and they sent out some questionnaires after the fact and wanted to know what we liked, what we didn't like, and they've made a few changes for the following year. They're fixing it so that you don't have that really long drive down to Nebraska after Montana. I think they're going to change the order of the races for next year. But for a first-year event, it was outstanding.
Well, that's really good to hear. I'm looking at their website. It looks like the motto is, where finishing is more important than finishing first. There's no time limits. So there were, I guess,
really... Sorry, I lost you for a minute there, Dave.
Okay, I'll try it again. Can you hear me now?
Yeah, I caught what you said, though. It just clipped out for a minute. But they're all about just finishing the races. You can go as fast as you want. I had fun with it. I didn't push myself too hard because I knew if I went out too hard, I might not be able to do all of them. But they have awards for the last place finisher each day. They call it the caboose. So whoever finished last got a prize for the end of the day.
Cool. Well, it looks like they're planning. I want to get into the some of the more philosophical stuff here in a second. But it looks like they're planning for 2015 an independent series with Maryland, Delaware, New Jersey, Pennsylvania, and New York. Did you see that?
Yeah, and they have a new Heartland series they're starting this year, too, with Iowa,
yeah,
and Illinois and such.
Yeah, they got all kinds of stuff. Yeah, I didn't even see the Appalachian series. I wonder where it's going to be in Virginia.
I think part of it is they're doing it so people who are trying to run a marathon in all 50 states can do it a little bit more affordably without having to travel to each state individually. They can knock a couple of them out of the way at one time.
That's really, really a good idea. Yeah, I encourage all listeners out there, anybody that's interested in learning more about it, go to manlymarathons.com. Definitely has all the information. Pretty sophisticated, too, in looking at the website. I'm pretty impressed with what did you say the race director's name was?
Clint Burleson.
Yeah, he definitely is motivated. Do you know if he does this for for his income, or does he? I mean, obviously, he has to take several weeks out of the year to do it. Do you know if this is what he is? He retired? Do you know and much more about him?
You know, I can't remember if he's retired or not, but he just loves doing this. He and his wife travel in their RV to the races, and his brother Jeff and his wife Jane came in from Minnesota, and by the end of the week, you felt like you were their family. They're just so welcoming and just thoughtful and kind people. You couldn't ask for a better race director than Clint.
So what is the mentality night before the first race, which is, you know, you're really just looking forward to getting the first one. But then when you finish the first one and regardless of your physical fitness level, you know, doing a marathon, you know, wipes you out. There's no doubt about that. And then you finish, and then you know you got four more days. What's the mindset there, and what do you do for motivation at that point?
Well, I took it slow, like I said. That I mean, I probably went about 45 minutes to an hour slower than some of my faster marathons, so that I would be able to not be hurting so bad the next day. And I just made sure to ice my feet at the end of the day after the race, but the hardest part was just getting up the next day and doing the same thing over again. And that first mile or two, you're all stiff and everything hurts. And then by mile 15 or 20, it's just, you just keep going and just wash it off your brain and just keep moving forward.
And did you do, like when I ran with you last year at the Blue Ridge Marathon, which I've got a friend going down to do this Saturday, did you do any run walk, or did you have a strategy of a slow pace, or how did you handle the distance?
I did a lot of run walk. I didn't really follow any certain pacing. Sometimes I would just, when the mile ticked off on my watch, I would just walk a minute or so, but I kind of adjusted it as it went on. And some days I ran harder than others. Like the second day I think I ran almost the entire race with my friend Jennifer, who is from Ohio. I'd met her at a couple of races in the past and we really hit it off. So we just had fun that day and just ran the whole race together. And it was just like a 26.2 mile fun run with your girlfriend. It was just awesome. We just talked the whole time and high-fived other people as they were passing by, and it was just like a big party, and everyone really got along at this event. It was so fun.
And I guess you knew after the first day, did they have a show of hands, I guess, at the first race, who was doing all five? Was there any kind of camaraderie, I guess, once you recognized people that were in it for the long haul?
Yeah, you just started getting to know the faces, and I think they had our names on our bibs, so you'd say, you'd know their names as you saw them. And you just started connecting with people out there each day. I swear you made 10 new friends at least. By the end of the week, you're all Facebook friends. It was cool. They did a really cool thing with this race too for your medals. At the beginning of the race.
Oh, I saw that on the site. Yeah, go ahead.
Oh, I'm sorry. At the pasta dinner, they gave you your kind of, I guess you'd call it your start medal. It's the ribbon. And then it had the, kind of a compass point and a map of the U.S. and then the states you ran in kind of came out of the map a little bit higher, so it stood out. And they had little clips at the bottom of them. And then after you run each state, you would get a medal for that particular state that you could clip on to the first medal. By the end of the race, you'd have all five of them, and then they gave you a little placard that goes on the bottom of it that hangs from it, and it says the year. So it was pretty cool. And if you put the medal on, I swear it about goes down to your knees if you're wearing it. Pretty crazy.
There is a picture of that on the manlymarathons.com website. I pulled that up when you're talking about it, and it looks pretty cool.
It's neat.
It looks like, yeah, it has that compass, and there's five medals going from that. Now, what's the I mean, it's still hard for me to kind of just, I mean, it's one thing to do a 20-miler on a Saturday, 10-miler on a Sunday, and that's like your max double long runs, at least in my experience. I mean, I can't imagine doing that over 5 days. I mean, you hear about these people that do these epic runs and cross-country runs and all that, and what you, as far as I'm concerned, what you did is like a stage race, really. It's you're just traveling to a different state. And how many states do you have now, by the way?
19 right now, and hopefully I'll get North Carolina in a week and a half.
Which one are you doing down there again?
New River Marathon in Boone.
Man, I'm not familiar with that one. I only know of a couple down there now. You've done 36 marathons. 13 of those have been ultras, including 200 milers. Is that correct?
Yes.
So how did this compare to the 100-mile efforts that you've done, which your third attempt is going to be this weekend, which I have full confidence that you'll do. But
Thank you.
I mean, I remember when you did your first one, and actually you didn't make your first attempt. I hate to bring that up, but
I didn't make my first or my third.
That's right.
I've got like a 50% ratio going.
So you got a 50% chance.
Odds this weekend.
Well, 50. You know, flip the coin, right?
Yeah.
So what was the takeaway from that? And when you look back, you did 135 plus miles in 5 days, or and then, you know, doing 100 miles or whatever. What did your body feel like? Was it comparable at the end, or was it five marathons? Was it more like that, or did you feel like it was more of an ultra effort?
Well, it was 100 times easier than doing a 100-miler, for sure, because you could get off your feet in, you know, say 5-6 hours at least, and then you have the whole day to rest and recover and hydrate, and I mean, you're probably not going to get the stomach issues and things like that that you have, or lack of sleep and stuff that you deal with during a 100-miler, but I think the only reason that I wasn't hurting so bad at the end was I took it real easy on all of them. I didn't go out trying to get a PR on any of these days. Like I said, that each day was at least an hour more than my good times for running marathons.
Oh, yeah, because your PR is well under 4 hours, isn't it?
Yeah, my best was a 3:55, and I didn't do any of these faster than 5:16. I think my longest was like 5:49.
Right, I'm looking at second day. Was 5:49.
I think the coolest thing was that the first and the last were the exact same time.
You know, I saw that, and right exactly even minute. That is really interesting. I guess you didn't plan that.
Well, I was trying to go faster for the last one, just to say I could do the last one the fastest, but it didn't work out. But I was pretty happy with the way it worked out anyway, though.
So you had, after you finished the last one on September 20th, that was a Friday. You had the weekend, and then it looks like you went right back at it in Atlanta. That's a long drive from Michigan. I guess you just took some more time off from work.
Well, I only work part time. I'm retired, and
right.
My husband took a month off.
Oh, okay.
We went down to visit his family in Atlanta area.
And then you did the Atlanta Marathon, and still respectable time. And looks like you're. Oh, so that started in the Olympic Village area, which is where they had the Olympics. Was that where the bombing was?
Yeah. That was really something going through there.
Yeah, that poor guy that they thought did it, man. They really ruined his life, didn't they?
I know.
I think he's a deputy sheriff somewhere now. I'm not really sure.
I think I remember hearing that, too.
So what's the biggest takeaway, Sandy? I mean, is this something that you would recommend to others? Is this something that is just kind of a... hey, you know, it's kind of a private experience I had, and it's just something I wanted to do, or is this something you tell that you're, I can't remember if you told me it's something I should try or not. I'm always up for something kind of crazy, but that's a long time to spend in the Midwest without any Five Guys or something.
You know? Yeah, there was none of that out there. I think the closest we came was a Pizza Hut, and it wasn't all that good.
Yeah, so what was...
Eric did cooking.
What was the biggest thing you took away from the week? I know you met lots of people, and you're very outgoing with your running, which I think is really cool. I think that's, you know, how we've kind of hit it off. So what did you bring back home and from the experience that's the most memorable?
Well, I think the biggest thing is just to, you know, don't set any limitations on yourself, that you never know what you can do until you actually try. I had no idea if I could do this. I had no idea if I'd make it one race or three races or do all five when I signed up for it. I had hoped that I would be able to do all five, but you never know what each day holds when you do something like this. My husband has a desire to do the Gore-Tex Trans Rockies stage race someday, so I wanted to see how I could do with something like this, and I think eventually I'll probably try and convince him to at least do all the half marathons at something like this so that he can get a taste of that before doing the Trans Rockies. But we got to wait till he retires before that'll happen, so we got about 5 years still.
And that's is that a fast hiking event?
You know, it's kind of a team thing where okay. You are with a partner, and then they have a I don't know if it's hiking or running, but you have, you know, so many hours or whatever to get your mileage in for the day. Some of it's at altitude. And then they have a tent city where you can just go there and you get your tent at the end of the day and you sleep in it and have a meal. And I think they might have some kind of portable showers or something. I'm not 100% sure, but it's just a multi-day event thing. And I think you'd really enjoy that, getting out on the trails like that.
Trans Rockies, well. I got to meet Eric last year at the Blue Ridge Marathon, which I'll never forget that last mountain we climbed.
You never forget Peakwood.
I just can't believe you can take a moving truck up there. I mean, I can't believe people live at the top, but that thing was practically straight up, and I guess everybody lives slanted up there. It was pretty incredible, but they'll be at it again this weekend. There was a nice write-up on that marathon in the recent Runner's World, or maybe it was a month or so back. I usually get hand-me-down issues. I don't know if you saw that or not.
Yeah, I really like that race. That was a beautiful course.
I think I'll return there someday. I don't know when, but
I'd do it again too.
Yeah, sure. That whole weekend was cool. Going out and getting something to eat, and just the weather. Of course, it was pouring down rain on that Friday, but boy, it was a gorgeous day on Saturday.
It was great.
So you got the 100-miler or the 24-hour race this weekend, and I guess you know I've signed up for a 24-hour race in November.
I know, it's exciting.
It is. I'm still in the honeymoon phase, if you listened to my last show.
Will you do the full 24 hours, or are you getting to a mileage and then calling it a day?
Well, my initial goal is going to be 50 miles, because I've been wanting to do another 50-miler, and the race director, Brandon Wilson, just kind of offered this thing out to me when I've helped him on the graveyard. And so that's kind of an initial goal, and so my goal is to do that in 12 hours. So that obviously would be 8 o'clock at night, because the race starts on Saturday morning at Saturday morning at 8. So, you know, it looks like I'm going to have at least one crew person to help, or at least, or to drive me home. And in some ways you kind of feel like you don't want the party to be over, I guess, at 8. I don't know. I'm rethinking it. I kind of tweaked the idea of what I'm going to do each time that I kind of mull it over. So we'll kind of see. But my goal is going to be 50 miles, get 50 in under 12 hours to see if I can do that again. I've only did that one time before. And then we'll maybe add on to that. My 100K is the max I've done, and I just about killed myself doing that. So anything beyond that at this point might be kind of foolish to think, because I'm not really going to be training beyond for a 50-miler. So a lot of it depends. I'm having some shoe issues. I got some of those Hokas, and I've got about 350 miles on them, but the heels are starting to wear a little bit quicker than I kind of thought they would. And I don't drag my heels when I run, so I'm not really sure why they're wearing out quicker than I guess they should have for the amount of money I paid for them.
At the race I'm going to do this weekend, when I was there last year, there was a lady that I was talking to. Her name was Crystal, and she said she'd never done anything further than the 50K at this point last year. And she said, I asked her how far she was going to go, and she said that she was going to go 77 miles, and I couldn't figure out why she would go 77 miles, because they only have awards for 50K, 100K, and 100 miles. Well, she told me that her family did a Biggest Loser competition.
Oh, wow.
And that she said she would run a mile for every pound they lost, and they lost 77 pounds, so she was kind of committed to doing 77 miles.
Wow.
Well, I was done with my race at, I don't know, 11 o'clock, and she was still going, and she was ahead of me. And, I stopped at the 100K mark, and she was still going towards her 77 miles. I got up the next morning after having a good, 7 hours of sleep, and I wanted to go get to the award ceremony just in time to see how people did overnight. I got in there and I found out that she did something like 106 miles.
Oh, that's incredible.
And she'd never done more than a 50K before. That's just amazing. That's why I was saying you never know what you can do until you try it.
That is incredible. Wow.
So she's going to be there this year, so I don't know what she's going to do this year, but I'm going to try and keep up with her.
Wow. Well, I'd be interested to hear about that. Are you going to be posting anything on Facebook or Twitter? Is Eric going to be giving any updates?
He's going to put some posts on my wall, so just check in there. I don't know how often he'll post. I said don't put something up every mile or something like that. I don't want everyone to unfriend me because of it. So I think maybe every 10 miles or so he might put something up, but he'll probably go to sleep at night because he's going to drive us down to Virginia in the next morning. So I don't know if he'll put anything up before the finish, but I'll put something up when I'm done if he doesn't.
Well, the last time I definitely followed the posts, I thought that was a really cool way to do it. And I'm sorry I'm going to miss you on your visit to Virginia, but we will definitely cross paths again. I'm pretty certain about that.
Oh, absolutely.
I don't think there's any doubt about that. Well, I wish you all the best with the 24-hour race coming up this weekend. I know 100 miles is your goal, and definitely wish you the best. And we'll be thinking about you here in the center of the universe as we do the railroad run this weekend. I'm going to be running into Dr. Smitty. He'll be up from Chesapeake for the race. And we'll see how it goes. Looks like we're going to have really good weather, so I hope you do too. And thanks again for coming on the show to be interviewed. It's good to have you on the show again, and I'm sure that we will probably do it again. So any last words for the people out there?
Just don't set any limitations on yourself. Just see what you can do when you get out there. Don't let anyone tell you you can't do something. But thanks for having me on the show, Dave. I really appreciate it.
You're welcome. My pleasure. And that was a bit of a weird edit there at the end. Sorry about that. We're really thankful for Sandy and her time. She was off to do a 24-hour race this weekend after that interview. Let me check in on that. All right, I just checked her Facebook, and she did 100 kilometers in 24 hours. This was the Outrun 24 in, I think it was Kirkland, Ohio. So congratulations on that, Sandy. And I want to check in on a race report that I have not, that's way overdue, and that's Chad Palmer's Black Canyon 100. Okay, that was back in, this was February 15th. It was in Black Canyon National Recreation Trail, which lists Black Canyon City, Arizona. But from what I understand, that's actually near, really close to Phoenix. And so Chad ran that, and he's interviewed on the DFL Ultra Running Podcast, the DFL standing for Dead Freaking Last Podcast, or you fill in a different word for the F. It's a pretty good podcast. The only problem with me listening to it, the whole thing, is that it's generally over 3 hours long, and I don't have the type of device that I put the podcast on when I'm portable to scroll through to a certain time. I've got the old iPod Shuffle I got off eBay because it's the smallest and the easiest thing for me to use. Anyway, Chad Palmer was interviewed on that. I listened to part of it. Then I had to go on to move on to something else, and I wasn't able to get back to the same spot. But it's a pretty good interview, and it's kind of cool to hear him talk. But he also sent me a race report. And, Chad, if you still listen to my podcast, I'm sorry it took me so long to get to it, but I did want to go over some of your report because I thought it was pretty cool, and I've mentioned that I needed to do it. Chad finished in around 14 hours, 45 minutes, which is awesome for 100K, as far as I'm concerned. The cutoff was 16 hours. 75 to 80 people started the race, about 42 finished, and he was ninth male overall. He said it was about record heat in Phoenix, around 90 degrees, which is really hot for February down there. He said there was two big climbs on the second half of the race. That's what was predicted to be harder, which he said it was, but he said it played to his advantage since he's a better uphill hiker than a downhill runner. He'd never gone further than a 50K, so this was going to be a huge new thing for him. He said it starts at a high school track, and then I'll just quote from it. I was next to last coming out of the track. After the first couple of miles of running through the local residential area, the rest of the course was mostly single track bike trail and some jeep trail. The aid stations were 5 to 9 miles apart, stocked well. I started developing calf cramping halfway through the race whenever I tried to run hard, which I'd never had before, so I kept taking S-caps, and that eventually got better. Had some nausea due to the heat, but never felt like throwing up. Tried to stay cool by soaking my shirt at aid stations, putting ice in the bandana, under my hat, another wet bandana around my neck. Eventually the sun went down, and I actually felt better to run because it was like getting some air conditioning. He says the course was beautiful. We got to run from sun up to sundown, which he had never done before. That was fun with Chad, since he didn't want to see any rattlesnakes, which were already out. Quoting here, I met a lot of interesting people on the course. I ran 7 miles with a guy and his border collie dog. I think he took the dog 18 miles total. Then he left the dog with his wife. There weren't enough creeks to drink from, so he had to turn the dog in. He also ran with a 15-year-old cross-country runner who finished in just under 16 hours. I also had the privilege of running with a visually impaired runner who also finished in just under 16 hours as well. He's a very accomplished runner, finished third in the 72-hour race, running 200 miles at the local across the year's multi-day race. At the very last aid station, I was checking in, heard somebody call out my name. I looked around and couldn't see anybody I recognized. Finally, I looked down and saw my friend John lying on the ground trying to recover from his nausea. He had been a couple hours ahead of me, but slowed way down at the halfway point. We ended up finishing the race together, which was cool since he was the one who talked me into running this race in the first place. The best part of the race was running with my two teenage kids who were my pacers. My 18-year-old daughter picked me up for a 13-mile leg in the heat of the day with really difficult climbs and when I was in the worst shape. She reminded me to eat every 20 to 30 minutes, ran ahead of the aid stations to get my water filled, and she loved the atmosphere. We ended up passing a lot of runners in this stage as she helped me getting rehydrated and refueled. The steeper hiking parts also played a big part in us being able to catch many runners. As we were crossing a stream, as the sun was setting, we heard gunshots ring out due to the local shooting ranges, and my daughter said, "This is like the Hunger Games," as we were just trying to survive the heat until the sun went down. I ran the last 12 miles with my son, who was 16. He is a very fast cross-country runner, runs a 16:35K. He actually wasn't at the expected pickup spot because he was off-roading on the local Jeep trails. Kids, my last drop bag wasn't there either. Oh well, I filled up from the aid station, got back on the trail, leaving my daughter there. I knew my son would catch me quickly. I probably went a mile or two before he caught up to me. I had to warn a pair of runners that I'd passed that a teenage boy would probably come racing through the desert at high speed and not be alarmed. At this point, it was pitch dark outside. Sure enough, he caught up to me quickly and told me about the pair of runners he flew by and that they were expecting him. At the last aid station, I asked him how he liked ultra trail runs as he was chowing down on gummy worms, and Cokeney said they're awesome. So about half mile before the finish, I sent him ahead of me so I could tell my wife and other kids I'd be in soon. As he made his way in flying to the finish, he overtook another poor tired runner who started sprinting to avoid being passed by another runner. My son had to yell out, "Don't sprint, I'm just a pacer." My wife said the poor guy was running for his life when he crossed the finish line. It was great to get my first belt buckle. More important was knowing that I could run twice as far as previously had. My last mile was actually an 11:30 mile, which was pretty good considering my fastest mile was the first mile, and I ran that in 10 minutes. I felt very blessed and fortunate just to have finished the race, given the tight cutoff times throughout the day and a large number of DNFs. I did have a couple of blisters in both big toes, have pretty black nails, hopefully won't use them. But I'm back to running after taking a week off. Thanks again for the great show. I've enjoyed listening for the past year. Best regards, Chad Palmer. And Chad's out of Arizona. Chad, thank you very much for sending me that. I'm sorry it took me a little bit while to get to it. Sometimes it just takes a while, you know. But I do appreciate you sending that in. And for other listeners out there, I love getting race reports. Sometimes I have to kind of summarize them a little bit more for the podcast just for time, but I really like reading them. So if you do a cool marathon or ultra or something, or just have a great experience in a race, or if something kind of funny happens, I do like to get those in at ashlanddave@gmail.com. And if it's appropriate, and if you approve, if you send it in, I'd love to share it with other listeners. I also heard from Thomas Mueller. Thomas is going to be my next interviewee. I'm going to get that squared away from him. He was laughing at the last podcast where I was talking about the friction problem I had. And what he did was he referred me to the drugstore to Band-Aid. There's something called a friction block stick that looks like it's a lot cheaper than Body Glide. It's $5.99 at drugstore.com. So I will be checking that out. Thomas, thank you so much. I'm actually going to save that email so I don't forget to get that. And Thomas has recently got a book out called Mind Over Diet. Thomas is very accomplished. He just did Umstead, and he sent me the race report on that, which I'm going to save for the next, actually save for the use of the interview when I talk to him. And I don't know if I'll be doing that over the talk show or over the Skype. They both have different qualities. I was talking with Dr. Smitty the other day. He came up for the Ashland Railroad run. And he said, it sounds like the talk show sounds like you're talking in a can. So I might see what Thomas has, see if he wants to just do the Skype, or what I might actually do is just, I got some equipment where I can actually just record a phone call, and then I can just convert that digital file into an MP3 and put it into GarageBand and edit it from there. But I'm going to save all this for the interview with Tom, but he's got a book out called Mind Over Diet. He says his pitch is this: I've been in the endurance sport game for 31 years. I want to teach others how to engage the mind to direct, sustain good practice in food and fitness. I just completed the Umstead 100 mile this past Saturday, which would have been early April. So my credentials are fresh, and he sent me a couple of links. He's, of course, been mentioned many times on the podcast at mastercompetitor.blogspot.com. And Thomas, I'll be contacting you soon to set up that interview now that I've got Alex done and I've got Sandy done. Those are two long-awaited interviews I wanted to do, and I guess you putting your book out inspired me to get those interviews completed so I can learn about those folks' experiences at their races, and I can kind of get caught up with some of the stuff I want to go over. So Thomas, be looking out for an email from me to get that set up. Last but not least, I heard from Jeff Olaszewski out of Norristown, Pennsylvania, which is close to Valley Forge. Got a Stand Up and Be Counted email from him, so I'll put him on the list. He's a beach body coach and a group fitness instructor in Norristown, a three-time marathoner. His goal is to qualify for Boston in 2017, and he has got a health and fitness podcast called The Next Level Podcast. Only 10 episodes so far, which ain't bad, but I'm going to link to his podcast at ashlanddave.podbean.com. But I'm sure if you go to search The Next Level Podcast, you will find that. So, but if you forget, I'll put that at ashlanddave.podbean.com and you can check that out. So Jeff, thank you very much. I got you on the list. And that is it for this week. Still, time is running out. This is episode 196. So 197 will be Thomas, the interview with Thomas. And then I'm going to do a episode about bandits. We had an incident in the Richmond area about a bandit that got paralyzed when he dove into a mud puddle at some kind of mud run and ended up getting money for that. Although he was paralyzed, he was a bandit. So I'm going to do a show on that. So we're rapidly approaching episode 200, which I want to celebrate with a Stand Up and Be Counted. And that's a kind of a listener roll call. If you want to be involved in that, time is running out. All you do is send me an email to ashlanddave@gmail.com. Tell me where you hail from and kind of what you run. And I put you on the list, and I'll celebrate that by mentioning everybody in the 200th episode, and it kind of helps me to find out where everybody's from. I don't keep the data. I've said this before. I'm not trying to create a database of runners, emails that are related to running for marketing. I don't do any marketing. I don't even get any advertisements on the podcast. I've said it for the last couple of years. If you want to advertise on my podcast and reach about 500 people a week who run, send me an email at ashlanddave@gmail.com and we can work something out that will be more beneficial to you than me, I assure you. But this is all done on my dime, and I'm happy to do it. So send me an email at ashlanddave@gmail.com if you want to stand up and be counted and be included in the listener roll call coming up in a couple episodes in the future. Will probably be early summer. So this is Ashland Dave. I'm coming at you from the center of the universe, Ashland, Virginia, reminding you to run to the finish, keep on running. Don't forget to hug your kids, and y'all have a great week.